Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is July 10th, 2015. On today's show, I'm happy to welcome back writer, graphic artist, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. On today's show, we're going to be discussing another one of my very favorite workbook lessons. This one's number 182. I will be still an instant and go home. While you're listening, please join us in the 12radio.com private group on Facebook. And if you haven't been there before or you're brand new to the show, welcome. One of the easiest ways to get there is to actually go to our website, the 12radio.com website. And on the left side of the page, you'll see a button that says chat. Just click that and you'll be automatically redirected to our private group where you can hit the join button. And the guy at the door ready to let you in is our producer, Scott Weaver. Scott, thanks for being here today. And I'm anxious to get on with this lesson, so let's do it. Welcome, Bruce. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, EA. Thanks for having me back again, as usual.
And thank you for the suggestion of the lesson. And as usual, it was such synchronicity because I had actually been reading this lesson and thinking about this lesson when, you know, all of a sudden you just pop in and say, hey, let's do lesson 182. So I know that it was kind of a, I don't know if I should say great minds think alike, but maybe I should say right minds think alike.
Right.
Because it came to both of us or something like that.
But we all have a right mind. I think that's the important thing to mention off the bat, that that's our true nature, and that's really what this lesson speaks very deeply about. I believe is that longing, that nostalgia, that poignant call to return to the reality we never left. That we're on. And you were mentioning before we got started recording, vacations and travel and so forth. But we've been on to paraphrase the Gilligan's Island theme, it's not a 3-hour tour. It's it's a multi-millennial, seemingly within the dream of time, tour that we think we've usurped eternity and replaced it with this seemingly ceaseless saga. How's that for alliteration?
Yes, I wouldn't try to say it.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, just there's a lot in that workbook lesson, isn't there?
Oh, and this is one of the ones, it's like the beginning of chapter 15, which is one of my favorite sayings. Can you imagine what it's like to just be perfectly still and to not be worried or anxious all the time? And when I read those words, it's just, I just feel my body relax. Mm-hmm. And I feel all of a sudden it's like, yeah, okay, I get this. I understand this. All of a sudden it's making sense why I feel not comfortable or why I feel like I'm not at home. I mean, for all those millions of people out there who we always sense that kind of what I call the black hole. We always sense that something's missing. Mm-hmm. This is one of those lessons that all of a sudden says, okay, guys, well, listen up. This is what it is. This is why you feel that.
Exactly. And as you're saying that, I was flashing back on something that happened over a year ago, actually. I was returning back from my daily commute on the light rail and in downtown Denver to where I live south of there. And there was a person during the holidays, actually, and they were sobbing. And I was just watching. I was not close to this person physically on the train, but I was watching another person comforting this person and trying to assuage their concerns and so forth. But they were obviously having a breakdown of some sort, and I was thinking that feeling of sadness and loss and lack that we go around with this stoic and the not necessarily beneficial sense of the word, we go around so often thinking that, oh, things are great here, and then I think that's what Ken refers to as bliss knees, which is why I made a calendar with some of my favorite quotes that kind of put the kibosh on that. But if we really, I think, again, what Ken says in the audio that we both listened to about lesson 182, and this lesson speaks so profoundly to, is the this longing to return to that place in our minds. And it's not, as it points out, it's not our childhood home, because that's been so distorted we can't even, there's really nothing of that that really is what we're trying to find. It's really the quality of mind that we think we've lost. And that's just a symbolic metaphor for the perfect oneness that we thought we shattered. We thought we destroyed a love that's so all-encompassing and so complete that we can't even fathom it. We're so far down the rabbit hole of our valuation of a dream that when we've gotten so engrossed in the role that we think we're it. I actually think I'm a person called Bruce, and that I'm talking to a person called CA, and that I'm on a planet that is rotating around the sun and rotating around a galaxy and part of this incredibly convincing space-time hologram. And wow, speaking of special effects, what an amazingly convincing dream. No wonder we're confused and befuddled, and if we're honest with ourselves, saddened at what we think we lost, because we're so engrossed in this role, we've convinced ourselves we pulled off the impossible crime, that we managed to shatter perfect oneness. And boy, is it convincing. Yeah.
Yeah, we're very good at
Yeah.
it, but
So,
not good enough.
right. Yeah, that's where the real hope comes in, isn't it? Because that's where the light, shines through the cracks in ego's armor, through its, double shield of oblivion of making up a world, which is kind of like the what we see through the windshield or dashboard of our mind, the windscreen. And then the ego's interpretation of that is like the dashboard that has all the controls and widgets and indicators and alarms. And of course, there's really nothing to be alarmed about, but the ego filters it in a way that suggests that there's all kinds of problems. And because we don't pay attention to them, we've like put masking tape over those idiot lights. And so we're that's the double shield, basically. We basically made up a dysfunctional dream, and then we made up the whole system of projection and denial to further try to evade the awareness that would then bring us home if we really looked at it. And I think Ken said a whole bunch of things in that audio that are worth noting. One is the toys of battle that we use are really all the substitutes, all the special relationships, all the things that are specific in space and time, the specific people that we think are going to make us happy, or that we try to avoid that we think are going to make us unhappy, or the specific things that we do or don't do with our bodies for our health regimen, or for our finances, or for our relationship to the rest of the world, all that whole thing. And it would be silly to not to do the best we can to take care of ourselves in a kind way. But it's always amazing that we get so engrossed in thinking that, oh, this vacation, or this new car or computer or new relationship or new geography, or fill in the blanks is gonna make us happy. And I think that's what this lesson speaks to so nicely. It's just, all we ever made is hell.
Yeah.
And yet, but we it says, the third paragraph is, 1,000 homes he makes, yet none contents his restless mind. He does not understand, he builds in vain. The home he seeks cannot be made by him. There is no substitute for heaven. But the beauty is we never left it, but we don't know that until we are willing to look at, to pay attention to the dashboard indications in our mind, and to see the reflections as reflections through the windshield. Metaphorically, and see that we're basically reviewing a dream that's already gone by, but taking it seriously. We're taking a tiny mad idea so seriously that is really so silly. But that's the nostalgia. That's the longing, the deep, deep longing that we know there must be a better way. We know there must be another thought system that we can use, and that we all have access to 24/7, 365, to go home and to restore our mind to the state that, in truth, we never left. So,
Yeah. Well, and I would like to read the very first paragraph
Oh, sure.
of this, and because it's just so incredibly
It
wonderful,
is. It is.
and it's a good introduction. And by the way, though, before I do that, you know, one thing, we've referred to the audio a couple of times, and what Bruce is talking about is that Ken Wapnick did a whole series of workshops all on the workbook lessons, and that is available on CD from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles in Temecula, California. And so we both listened to the audio that Ken did on this particular lesson, and it really is wonderful because it's like being able to have a personal tutor, to
Yes.
have Ken right there just talking you through every single lesson. It's really worth having those, and so that's what he was referring to. But this is how this lesson starts. This world you see to live in is not home to you, and somewhere in your mind you know that this is true. A memory of home keeps haunting you, as if there were a place that called you to return, although you do not recognize the voice nor what it is the voice reminds you of. Yet still you feel an alien here, from somewhere all unknown. Nothing so definite that you could say with certainty you are an exile here. Just a persistent feeling, sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return to mind again. And boy, I'll tell you what, that just grabs me. You know, from the very beginning, this lesson just, this one does, by the way, seem significantly different sometimes to me, the way it was written from some of the others. But, you know, who doesn't respond to that? I mean, like I said, who doesn't have that feeling every once in a while that, yeah, there's just something missing. There's just, you know, this whole illusion that we've created, somehow all the pieces don't quite fit together like we thought it was going to.
Exactly. Yeah. The how's it working out for you question.
Yeah.
We allow that to sink in a little deeper sometimes, and rather than you know, sink into depression or panic or fear or whatever, you know, other ego emotion that would be the normal reaction, the knee jerk, basically cover up or evasive maneuver that the ego tries to use to keep us from looking up the real story behind the curtain, so to speak. You know, it tries to keep Toto in the kennel, so it can't pull back the curtain. You know, it's like look over here. Don't pay attention to what's behind the curtain. But looking deeper, we realize that, well, there really is an opportunity at every moment that we can use. What the specialness we made, the expectations that we have around specific people and specific circumstances, you know, relationships, jobs, our bodies, you know, other people's bodies, you know, politics, you know, government and social services, and you know, you go on and on. We could just think of countless categories and subcategories of things that we all depend on and rely on. And it's a setup. It's a perfect setup so that we can if we go with ego's story, feel a victim of everything that seems to happen to us, and then we're like this little you know, picked on kid, that, because I think the child metaphor in this workbook lesson is so perfect, is, you know, then it's like, well, gee, my innocence is somehow endangered by something outside myself. But that's the dream. That's the incredibly sophisticated illusion that we made up, so that there's all these systems that, as long as we think we're a separate being that has a separate body that's distinct from the rest of the universe, then there's an automatic we-they warfare going on. And the peace that we want is, and the innocence that is intrinsically interconnected to that peace is lost in the scuffles and the shuffles and you know, the battlefield that we think we're in of duality. And but all we have to do is just turn it around and look at each seeming adversity, each seeming interpretation of pain, each seeming challenge or trouble, and say, okay, is this an opportunity to forgive myself for making up a dream of separation? and to forgive the dreamer. And I think that's it. I mean, the second paragraph says, others will deny that they are sad and do not recognize their tears at all. Still others will maintain that what we speak of is illusion, not to be considered more than but a dream. Well, of course, we've got everything backwards. The whole space-time, you know, individuality scenario is the dream. But we think that's real because we're such accomplished practitioners. We're consummate actors and actresses in a dream of duality. And we've forgotten that this is a massive cover-up operation here. Mm-hmm. And it's an inside job. And that's where our real hope is because if it's the inside job and it's in our mind, then we can turn it around. We can say, oh yeah, I made this up. And if I gave it all the interpretation that it has, if I gave it all the meaning that it has for me, all the things that I see in this room, on the street, you know, as the Worldly Workbook lessons say, then I can ungive them that interpretation. I can call to the witness stand, you know, ego's flawed interpretation and cross-examine, let the Holy Spirit just say, you know, of course it's silent, but the Holy Spirit's AKA inner kindness teacher, AKA Jesus of the Course, would basically say, yeah, right. or really? You know, you really want me to believe that this interpretation of suffering and agony and pain and misery is the real deal? And after a while, I think, you know, and obviously it's not helpful to you know, deny our feelings and all that sort of thing and to paint them invisible. That's also part of the ego strategy. But if we can look at them and say, yes, and where's this getting me? What am I actually achieving? What kind of mileage am I getting out of this? And do I like where this mileage is taking me? My frequent flyer miles and further into ego's territory, you know, is that really where I want to be? You know, maybe not.
Right.
Maybe not. So anyway.
Well, and you know, thinking about that paragraph, that what you were just saying, you know, just that whole idea of, you know, it starts with no one but knows whereof we speak, which I love. I mean, that's beautifully yeah. put, but that's it, that ultimately we all know what, you know, they're talking about here. And yet I was thinking of a couple of things that came up this week because, you know, like, for instance, you know, he goes on to say, you know, some of them are good, you know, some people say, oh, I'm not sad, it's all good. You know that phrase, it's all good. Mm-hmm. And I was having a conversation with somebody this week in which, even though she studies A Course in Miracles, she made some comment about, well, you know, ultimately the universe has a perfect plan and this all fits together or something. And I said, really? You know, and she goes, well, yeah. And I was like, you know, I don't know. And so we could, you know, I could tell I wasn't supposed to push the conversation because it was something that was upsetting. And it kind of went right back to, you just have to believe there's a purpose in this, because if you don't, your head's going to explode. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, but I think about this, you know, because it's so hard, you know, it goes right back to God did not create the world. And that, to me, I always feel like that's such the, you know, one of the biggest stumbling blocks for yes. anybody who comes to the Course. Because when we're faced with something that goes on that doesn't make any sense, we've got to believe somewhere that there's a universal plan, you know, and that if we can just do it right, if we can just get through our lessons and somehow overcome this, that there is this universal plan that God has for us. And when, you know, you kind of step back and go, no, this is just the craziness. This is just the chaos of an illusion that we've created. And most of this stuff has no other plan other than the ego's plan to keep convincing us we're separated.
Right.
That's a hard pill to digest.
Oh, it's incredibly difficult. What
no
we're all
there's bliss ninnies, you yeah. know? We need to be bliss ninnies sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and there's nothing wrong when we lapse into those, you know, temporary things that assuage our pain and fears and so forth, and you know, try to, you know, really provide false comfort, basically. But it'd be silly to deny ourselves the magic, whether it's you know, vitamins or medicine or, you know, getting a massage or doing something that we exercise or you know, a bowl of ice cream with the chocolate sprinkles or what.
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously, the thing to do is to ask yourself, why am I doing what I'm doing? And the more we ask that, the more we'll realize, oh, if I'm doing something because it's to fill some kind of an emptiness or some kind of a lack that I think that the self that I've identified with has, then maybe the deeper question is to question the identification with that self and not, you know, not belabor the mechanism by which we are trying to you know, use as the workbook lesson says, you know, the toys of battle, the substitutes, you know, the games that we play to occupy our time that are attempts to try to get rid of the sadness that we feel, that we think we messed up heaven. We think we dethroned God, threw him under the bus, and you know, and now we're just kind of, you know, alone and in constant fear and forever challenged by a world that doesn't understand us. Well, that's because we don't understand that we made it all up.
Yeah, and sometimes I wonder, why don't we ever stop and question why the next big thing isn't going to make us happy? Mm-hmm. Why do we keep believing it's going to make us happy? And we do. And yet, how many times have we been through this? I mean, once you get to be 5 or 6 years old, you realize whatever you really want, once you get it, you're going to want something else.
Right.
And so why don't we stop and question that?
That's a good rhetorical question. And of course, the answer that the ego never wants to hear is that, you know, I think it kind of reminds me of that part in the manual where, you know, it talks about, you know, that the ego's questions are always really statements in disguise, that we always ask questions if we're identified with our egos in a way that really reinforces the problem. It really doesn't lead to its undoing. So if we basically are making a statement that is propaganda for the ego's thought system, then we don't really want the answer from that point of view, from that perspective.
Right.
So that's where the challenge is to develop, you know, an uncompromising honesty with ourselves. And it doesn't mean to change behavior necessarily, or certainly not right away, because we're all so well versed in this role that we've made that it takes some time to become more mindful and to really watch when there's an inner, you know, dashboard indicator says tilt, you know, alert. But the ego's alert is always one that leads us into fear. But the Holy Spirit's indicators are very calm and reassuring that remind us that the panic or the alarm or the situation that or the outrage that we're reacting to is something that we made up, and that it's a dream figure reacting to other dream figures that we can step back from. And I love the metaphor of, you know, in the hero of the dream and the dreamer of the dream sections of the course, you know, we have to get near those anyway. I think above the battleground, you know, we have to actually remember, using this innocent child metaphor, this awareness that knows that it never left perfect oneness, to rise above that dream of duality and say, oh, this specific thing that seems to be bothering me right now, in whatever fashion it's doing, seems to be doing so, is an opportunity for me to forgive myself, to forgive the dreamer, which is my mind. And obviously, we didn't make up the entire universe ourselves, but as an individual, certainly the CAs and the Bruces and the you know, all the listeners that might be hearing this, you know, none of us did it by ourselves. But as one ego mind, we made this up. We fabricated an incredibly sophisticated moving holographic display that we have taken, you know, with other sensory, you know, inputs as well. We got touch and smell and hearing and taste and, you know, all that stuff. And boy, what, it's so convincing, isn't it? I mean, we think it's the real deal. But if we can call it into question, if we can, you know, get it to the witness stand and say, is this evidence, not to deny the data, but the interpretation that the ego makes of it. If we can say, do I really want to interpret this as something that is keeping me, keeping my mind in this dream? Then, in honesty, we can say no. We're free to go in whenever we want. The jail door has always been open and unlocked. We just never tried it.
Right. Well, and one of the paragraphs in this says, perhaps you think it is your childhood home that you would find again. The childhood of your body and its place of shelter are a memory now so distorted that you merely hold a picture of a past that never happened.
Exactly.
And I love that too, because it's kind of like what you're saying. If we really started questioning it, you know, it's not even a past that really ever happened, even within our illusion.
Right.
We're not good at the memory. And
yeah.
I think of this paragraph too as just being so incredibly important, because when we feel that emptiness, when we feel that sense of lack, or that something's not there, that something's missing, how often do we think that if we could just return to our past, if we could just return to some simpler time, that all these problems would go away? I mean,
right.
Do we not hear that on almost a daily basis somewhere
mm-hmm.
in our lives?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I get it, because I kind of think of that too. You know, sometimes I think when I was six and I was just, you know, my biggest goal was to swing on the, you know, playground or something. But that's such an illusion.
Right.
You know, when we were six, we thought we had all kinds of problems and issues, didn't we?
Sure, sure.
You
oh,
know,
you bet.
So.
Yeah.
Going back or thinking, having this made up past of somehow being simpler or having a happier life is, you know, it's easy to see that from this distance. That's what we always imagine the past was.
Right.
Well, not
it,
for everybody, but, you know, for the most part, when we think that way, when we get nostalgic.
Yeah. It's ego's game of carrot on a stick of thinking, oh, well, the next, you know, this next week or this next month or after I get this done and finish, you know, this to-do list and check all these things off my bucket list or whatever, then I'll be happy.
Uh-huh.
It's that we're living on the fantasy someday aisle.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
You know, and it's not a 3-hour tour. It's a lot longer. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm quite the list maker. And I have never stopped doing that. But I remember reading, and I have this really wonderful book that is just kind of daily meditations on Taoism. And it's kind of ironic because the cover is a cell phone.
Oh,
and, you know, funny. Just trying to kind of, you know, get you away from that, I guess, maybe for a few minutes. But one of the things, I don't even remember who the writer is, because it's a collection of many, many different writers that this person has put together. But one of them says, every time you make a to-do list, all, you know, all that ever is a reminder to you that you're not where you want to be.
Exactly.
And I thought about that and I thought, whoa, you know, because you're right. Because do you ever get to a point where everything's crossed off?
Nope.
No, I nope. don't. Nope. I just, you know, I just keep adding more things to the bottom or start all over again. And I thought, wow, that's just a constant reminder to your psyche that you're not there. You're not yeah. where you want to be. You're not in the moment.
That reminds me of a really wonderful audio of Ken's that talks about the myth of Sisyphus,
uh-huh.
which is you know the adversity of you know everyday life that is just a recurring process that we never caught up. And when you mentioned lists, there's actually a list on our refrigerator that says something like the never ending list or the perpetual list. And that's it. I mean, but that's a little more honest than thinking that, you know, when we cross off that last thing that suddenly we're going to be done. You know, I brushed my teeth for the last time. I'm done with that.
That's right.
Don't have to do it ever again, you know, make the bed, you know, pay the bills, yada, yada. I mean, all that
now,
stuff.
It's the myth of Sisyphus. I don't know if I said it right, the one pushing the rock up the hill.
Exactly yeah, and he's forever condemned to have to, you know, push the rock up the hill only to have it come crashing down on him and start over. And that's the ego strategy that oh well we'll give you this little momentary you know
sense of accomplishment,
euphoria. Exactly. Yeah, this momentary feeling that you've of relaxation or release, and you know, and that's played out in our physical lives in countless ways, the, you know, the tension release cycle, but the release is never complete. You know, whether it's a physical pleasure or a mental relaxation, it's if it's based on something that's happening out seemingly outside ourselves in the dream, there's never that going home that feeling that's complete that this workbook lesson talks about. There's never a feeling that somehow now we can finally relax completely.
Right.
Because there's always this nagging, you know, something hanging over our heads that's like, oh, well, yeah, I got to deal with this next. But at least we get these momentary respites. You know, like the Course says, you know, it doesn't seek to deprive of us of the little we think we have. So the little pleasures, the little rewards, the little momentary feelings of accomplishment or whatever, you know, nothing wrong with that. But just to be honest, it's like there is a real alternative to that endless game of you know, basically, you know, the alien game that the ego's thought system represents of trying to make a made-up world work for us.
Mm-hmm. And in this workbook lesson, it's be still an instant and go home with him and be at peace a while.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, that's why this is so wonderful, because it is even saying, I know you're going to return.
Right.
I know you're going to pick up those defenses. I know you're going to pick up all that stuff again. But just for now, be still an instant and go home.
Yes. And I think that ties into one of the things that I always thought was useful and helpful in Gary Renard's work, that there, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Artner Persa that said something to the effect that the payoff for forgiveness is not only long term, because we're undoing, even though we don't see it in the biggest sense, because we're so myopic and zoomed in on what seems to be happening in our little dream world, but we're slowly but surely undoing all the tethers that hold our virtual hot air balloon to the ground. And it's only not until the last one is cut or untied that we finally take off, you know, once and for all. But each one that we loosen, each one that we sever, each one that we let go of and undo is a momentary, even if it just lasts a few minutes or a few seconds, a momentary return to that home where we realize, oh, yeah, I can be peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Until the ego says, but what about
me? Yeah, but.
And it's just kind of like, you know, making a depression in the ocean, you know, and it's like, well, the rest of the ocean is going to come to fill it in pretty quick, you know. I mean, you can push down the water, but with various means, but that ocean's going to fill it in pretty quick until you finally decide, well, maybe there's a place where, you know, this oceanic thought system of ego doesn't exist and can't exist, and that's where we're headed.
And the more often that we can be still an instant and go home, it just becomes, you know, a habit in our minds more and more and more and more.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that habit builds and accumulates, and then the contrast between choosing the thought system that we never really left, that home in our mind, and the not so real alternative becomes so stark, and it's like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this again? And eventually we'll say, gosh, I just can't deal with, you know, this dysfunctional, as Ken says, maladaptive solution to the non-existent problem anymore. I'm giving up on you, ego.
Yeah.
But we do it, like you say, in stages. We do it just little bits at a time over many, many years, typically. But it gets us there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when Ken did this audio, I remember one of the very first things he says when he opens up this lesson is, he says, this is a lesson that teaches us that the goal of the course is not to be happy here.
Exactly.
But to realize that there is another place where we can be happy, that it is possible to find home. And I love that he continues to remind us of that. The
yes.
idea is not to figure out how we can fix the world or keep patching up the maladaptive solution. Because
right.
we can't fix the solution.
Mm-mm.
The solution is flawed from the very beginning.
Right, right. Exactly. It's there's a lecture that I heard in a group that I put together a few years ago in Northern California called New Frontiers, the Goal of the Country, named David Icke. And he gave a talk to our group at one time. And he talks about more about, you know, sort of the secret government conspiratorial stuff, and you know, there's plenty to that, of course, but what the take home lesson for me nowadays is, well, that's the ego's, you know, espionage and sneaky tactics. It's basically, it makes up a problem and then poses a solution that's not going to work. which is really another way of, you know, saying Ken's quote, you know, the maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem. But the non-existent part, I think, is the hopeful, helpful part, that if we can remember that we're dreaming, if we can have those lucid moments and say, oh, yeah, that's right. This is not my real world. This is not my home. And like you say, that and Ken points this out early on in that audio, is, you know, if we can look at our suffering, if we can look at our discomfort and the pain and the misery that we've made, and not amplify it, not extend it, not try to prolong it in any way, but just by looking at it, it dissolves. But it's only by looking at it, only by bringing it into the light, can we see that it was founded on a faulty premise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is also a great point that I struggle with occasionally, but I think I finally got it. You bring things to the light. You don't try to bring the light to the darkness.
Right.
You know, that, and see, we just are continually trying to do that. We're, you know, continually trying to look at our illusions and prove that they're true, or somehow bring them to some test of, you know, credibility. And it's like, no, you bring all these illusions to the light, and then you're going to see them for what they really are.
Yep. And sometimes we need those mirrors to remind us, that we look, if we look at ourselves, we say, oh gosh, I've got my dream repair technician hat on again, you know. Sure enough, I'm trying to fix the dream, and I'm thinking that that's the important thing, you know. And then forgive ourselves and be kind with ourselves when we catch ourselves doing that. And just say, oh yeah, there I go again, trying to make the dream work for me. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's obviously, you know, there's nothing worth condemning an actor or an actress on a stage for. If that's their lines that they were given, you know, they're just, mm-hmm. they're just doing their lines. But we can begin to realize, oh, I'm not the actor. I'm the as one of Ken's audios points out, I think it was, I forget the name of the historical figure who wrote, I'll think of it. They were the secret theatrical manager of our minds. We're basically, the name is on the tip of my tongue, but I'll think of it. Anyway, but I think the idea is the important thing, is that, you know, we don't really want to look at the contents of our minds, because that blows ego's cover. I mean, that says, mm-hmm. oh yeah, I'm giving it all the power and all the meaning and all the identity that this dream has for me. And I don't have to do that. I mean, you know, it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a choice.
Well, and I sometimes think of it like playing a game of Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get into the game and I'm going to have a really, really good time, but I'm never going to lose sight of the fact I'm playing a game.
Right.
And that, I think, is where I really want to get to in my life, where I can say I really, really enjoy this, or this makes me really sad, but I'm not going to confuse it and believe that it's not a script, that it's not an illusion.
Right.
You know, I'm going to try to remember every once in a while that I'm watching a movie.
Exactly. And if the enjoyment that we, what we call pleasure or enjoyment, you know, if it can change, then there's always this undercurrent. There's always this shadow side lurking that says, oh yeah, but something or someone or whatever can take this away.
Right.
And that's the other, you know, shoe dropping kind of thing, the Monty Python foot from the sky that we're always unconsciously or otherwise afraid of falling and, you know, putting the kibosh squash on us. And yet that being willing to look at while we're enjoying, without diminishing our enjoyment of the things of the world, recognizing with sort of that little inner smile that's like, oh yeah, and the real happiness that I'm looking for has nothing to do with anything that can change.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't possibly be anything that is ephemeral or changing or variable or in any way uncertain. And that is, again, I think what Ken points out brilliantly about this workbook lesson is that, you know, that's the purpose of A Course in Miracles, is to bring our spiritual pain and discomfort and suffering to the surface so that we can look at it and see that our dream repair technician strategy of oh yeah, I just, this next thing off the list, and I'm only 5 list items to go, and then I'll be happy. Yeah, right.
My life will be simple again.
It'll be so wonderful when I just do X, Y, and Z. Yeah, exactly. But that's really where the real peace is and the real happiness. And it does take infinite patience on our part. but that's what our inner kindness teacher has. It's not hurrying us along, but as your program slogan brilliantly says, I must say, why wait for heaven? You know, why postpone the enduring happiness that we can have by being willing to forgive ourselves for making up the dream? We have to, you know, take our internal fishing pole and reel in our projections. We basically look at all the stuff that seems to be outside and say, oh yeah, if I'm thinking it, if you spot it, you got it.
Right.
if it's in my mind, then I chose the thought system that seems to be making this experience for me. So I can unchoose it. If it's the ego, I can say, oh yeah, this isn't working out so good for me. And just say, nah, not today, or not this moment. Maybe just not for the next 5 seconds. I'm going to be still an instant and go home. Maybe I'm going to just have a little gentle inner laugh about my ego strategy and say, I know I'm going to go back to it, but just for 5 seconds, give myself a little mental break and relax and laugh.
Yeah.
How
well,
silly.
And I love that phrase. I don't remember now. It's from one of the workbook lessons. I think it's in the 160s, but I'm not sure. But I just love it. Why wait for heaven?
Yeah.
You know, because I find that I do that. You know, it's always, okay, I'm going to forget, but I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to do it today because I'm mad today or whatever it is. And, you know, when I came across that lesson, and I think it's somewhere else in the text, maybe it says, why wait for heaven? Why? You know, and
yeah.
You don't have to die to get to heaven. You don't have to have, like you say, cross off the list 1, 2, 3, 4 before that happens. So why wait? And that's a question I ask myself a lot. Why wait for heaven? But I haven't come up with a good answer yet.
Well, and it requires that we, as the Course says also brilliantly, that we have to question every value that we hold, because the ego's values are really obstacles to peace. They're the things that stand in the way of our peace. And I was kind of making some notes of what Ken was saying on this audio, and I had to smile when I remembered Robin Williams did a skit about golfing, where which apparently was invented in Scotland. So he has this really thick Scottish brogue, and he's talking about golf, and he's talking about all the sand traps and the trees and I was thinking, this is a perfect description of the ego strategy. And that is, I'm going to paraphrase it, what Robin Williams said is, we put shit in the way. You know, he's talking about golf, you know, but I think it's a metaphor for ego strategy. You know,
right.
we make sure that there are obstacles. We make sure that there are things that destroy and dash that feeling of home and peace and inner calm at every turn. I mean, everything that we made up by default from the ego that we see through the metaphoric windshield of our space-time sensory apparatus and as individuals, and that we interpret as some form of the ego's insane a trinity of sin, guilt, and fear thought system, all those are basically propaganda for this delaying tactic to keep us from being happy. So if we can look at that and say, I'm delaying my happiness by every time I'm making a big deal out of something in the world, and instead of using ego's interpretation, just say, oh yeah, I can turn this around. I can turn the tables on the ego and say, I'm going to use this instead of as a prison brick. I'm going to build a classroom with it, the same brick, the same specific experience, the same specific person that I'm relating to, or the thing that I'm seeing on the news or watching on TV or on the web or you know, wherever the seeming specific thing that isn't either a mild irritation to a you know, a holocaust in our mind. It's all the same stuff. There's no order or difficulty. It's all the same stuff we're putting in the way.
That's right. Well, and that whole there's no order of difficulty, that's also a stumbling block for people, because we believe that, you know, that things have significance. But if they're all illusion, how can one be harder than another?
Exactly.
It's just as easy to turn off one program as another, right? If I hit the button and switch the channel, it doesn't matter how heavy that show was, whether or not I'm turning off a cartoon or whether I'm turning off the news. It's one button and you just push it. It's all the same.
If all illusions are the same, then we can afford to be, you know, tune into that feeling of the real strength, which is the abstraction of seeing every dream as the same, and which really means also, conversely, that every spirit, every essence that we see in everyone is the same infinite spirit. That's something I also really appreciate from Gary Renard's work, is that if we can see all of spirit in everyone we meet, and remember to do that whenever we can, that whenever we have an issue, that we're raising to prominence and making that more important than the peace that we have and the feeling of inclusion and sameness that we have with whatever person, then we're basically saying, I'm willing to compromise perfect peace for this difference or this disagreement. And that's where the real strength is, isn't that? That gentle, lucid awareness that says, we're not different. We're all the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is just so darn hard to believe.
Yeah, the costumes.
It's a struggle.
The costumes are so detailed, and there's such fine workmanship, and
they're,
you know, down to the quark level. You know, we think that that one atom in any person's fingertip, you know, is going to be different than atom in another person's fingertip. You know, and the collection of them gets more and more complex and divergent, and it's incredibly amazing the how complicated and different things all seem, isn't it?
Yes, it truly is. Oh, well, this has been a wonderful lesson, and as I look at the clock, I'm just wondering, what else would you like to say about this lesson before we close today? I mean, are there some closing remarks you'd like to make about this?
I think what I love about it, which also reminds me of the Forgotten Song, which is, it has a similar tone and quality of that longing that we all have to return to that place of peace in our minds, and that we really do have the opportunity to every moment to go there. And obviously, it's not always easy, but it is simple, and we can do that by remembering that what we are unceasingly and eternally is true, and that innocence has never been gone. It's just been awaiting our choice to return to it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's it. We can always be still a moment and go home.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for this lesson, Bruce. This was really good.
You.
Like I said,
thank
I thought such synchronicity that you would suggest this lesson. And in fact, what was also synchronicity is I'd actually been talking to Susan Dugan about something else. And she goes, well, you know, it's kind of like lesson 182. And so I thought, boy, it's really on people's minds for whatever reason. But I'm very thankful for this lesson. And I would encourage everybody in our audience that has the Course in Miracles, when you've got that workbook, go open that up and check out that lesson. And if you don't, you know, you can actually go to the archives on 1-2 Radio. And if you find lesson 182, you can listen to somebody actually reading that lesson. All of the lessons are on 1-2 Radio in the archives. And I love that. I mean, I find myself sometimes I'm just out in the park, or I'm just someplace and I want to be reminded, or I want to hear a lesson. And I just, you know, use my smartphone, go to the archives and just pick one and listen to it. And it's very comforting to me. I love that. I love to have people reading to me. So there again, when you're remembering that lovely past and somebody reading you a bedtime story, you can just go to 1-2 Radio and you can listen to one of those in the archives, or you could actually listen to a show as well, including this one. So Bruce, thank you so much. And what other announcements do you have before we close the show today?
Oh, well, I was going to add, in addition to the archives that you mentioned, there's also two websites that are incredibly valuable resources for any student of A Course in Miracles, which is facim.org, which is the foundation for A Course in Miracles, that has tons of wonderful stuff, including what I'm personally having a great deal of fun going through is the FAQs, the frequently asked questions, of which there are like 1,300, and they're just brilliant. and also on the acim.org, the sister organization, which basically is the foundation for inner peace, up in Northern California, they have all the workbook lessons there too. So, if, for example, if you want to just go to lesson 182, you can just click on the workbook lessons and pick one for the calendar day of the year or whatever you happen to be at. And there's lots of great stuff on both those websites.
Oh, great! Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, and also I'm going to, since you asked, thank you. I'm going to be giving a workshop on August 9th, which is a Sunday afternoon from 1 to 4 at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center in Denver. And it should be a lot of fun. I kind of was alluding to some of the metaphors that I'm going to be using, which is the dashboard of the mind. So I'm calling this workshop Navigating the Dream with Forgiveness, our Inner Kindness Teacher's Dashboard. And so the subtext on that is, there are abundant metaphors all around us, including transportation gizmology, that our inner kindness teacher can use to help us mindfully keep on course in our forgiveness classroom. And the workshop will explore some of these. And so I took actually a photo of the rearview mirror on the car, and which normally says objects in the mirror are closer than they appear. So I doctored up with a little bit of Photoshop. So here's the Holy Spirit's AKA Inner Kindness Teacher's translation, which is ideas in ego's thought system are more clueless than they appear.
More clueless than they appear.
Yeah. So I'm going to have a lot of fun. I'm going to use a whole bunch of metaphors from planes, trains, automobiles, submarines, rocket ships, whatever, you know, certainly computers, you know, anything that is kind of like a metaphor for the screen of our mind and how we can basically look at ego's interpretations and just say, nah, and then use Holy Spirit's translations instead, which basically eliminates the distortion and returns us to mindfully forgive ourselves for what seems to be happening outside the windshield and also in our dashboard indicators that give us a symbolic representation. And yet we've got it backwards because the symbolic representation is really outside the windshield. But like everything else, ego inverts everything. So anyway, it'll be a lot of fun. So it's August 9th at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center in Denver, if anybody can make it. And there's links to that on the RockyMountainMiracleCenter.org website, as well as ACI and blog.
Okay. And that website is MiraclesCenter.org.
Yes, that's the old site. It'll take you there, but the new site is actually RockyMountainMiracleCenter.org.
All one word?
All one word, yeah. And okay. If you scroll down the sidebar, you'll see an announcement about the workshop.
Okay, great.
Lots of great things going on there.
I will go ahead and I will post that in the chat room along with your ACIMblog.com website as well. So, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today. And I look forward to, talking to you soon.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thanks to all the listeners and everybody in the chat room today. Thanks for making A Course in Miracles part of your day. Thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver, for being here, for keeping everything on track. You can always find me on Tuesdays for my other show, Simple Tales, where we discuss astrology, which is one of my favorite illusions in the dream world. You can also find me on 12listen.com for private readings and consultations. And of course, I teach on 12 Academy, so be sure to go over there and check out all of the classes that are available. You have about 5 minutes to get yourself another cup of coffee or tea or get a snack and be back in time for the Through Line with Christine DeMaurier, coming up next on Fabulous Fridays on 12 Radio. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and with my guest, Bruce Rawls on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.